Welcome, adventurer, to the Level Up Board Game Podcast, a show that uses your experiences and opinions to discuss board games and the gaming community. Join the heroes as they conquer perils such as meeples, cards, and miniatures, all in an effort to level up. You're listening to the Level Up Board Game Podcast.
Welcome back, adventurers, to the Level Up Board Game Podcast. My name's Patrick.
And this is Scott.
And we're really glad that you joined us today. We've got a lot on the slate, Scott. Not only are we looking to level up, but today we're going to level back a little bit. A bit of a retro episode we have going on. What's our review?
We are doing a review of an older game called Puerto Rico. I always like to do it with like Ricardo Montalban's accent, like Puerto Rico. It always goes along with the fine Corinthian leather. But yeah, we're going to be talking about Puerto Rico today and some other older games that people don't normally talk about that much.
Yeah, we're going to keep it old today. We're going retro, but we are going to go around the geek. We're talking about gaming pet peeves today, and we do still have an adventure on the horizon. Find out about what game is currently live on Kickstarter. Hear our thoughts about it and win a copy. We get a contest up and running, Scott.
I know. It's a great thing. I mean, we get to talk about games. We get to play a lot of games. But it's especially fun, I know for me at least, whenever we talk about games and we get to share those games that we get a chance to play, get a look at before anybody else. It's a great way to be ambassadors for developers and designers of different games and getting their games out there for everyone to play.
Adventurers, we're always telling you, join the Board Game Geek Guild. We've got some incentive for it now, Scott. We got a Board Game Geek micro badge.
I heard rumors of the sword, the shield.
Yeah, I submitted everything to get him turned into a micro badge, and it is up and running. If you join the guild on Board Game Geek Guild 3722, that's the Level Up Board Game Podcast Guild. Just shoot me a message. My name is Patman1. You'll see me in the guild, and I'll send you the geek gold so that you can get... You ready for the name, Scott?
Oh, let's hear it.
I'm calling him Wilford. I think you and I talked about it. We both agreed on Wilford is the name for our little 8-bit sprite guy for our podcast emblem.
All right. I'm going to put on my kingly crown, and we are going to make this official. In the name of God, Saint Michael, and Saint George, I dub thee Sir Wilford.
I love it.
He is now known as Sir Wilford, Protector of the Realm.
Well, get your Sir Wilford micro badge on Board Game Geek. Get it free. Just join the Board Game Geek Guild. Shoot me a message. Again, it's Patman1, and I'd be glad to send you the Geek Gold to get your very own Wilford. Well, King Scott, we both have some recent adventures of some not-so-recent games to talk about. Are you ready?
I am ready, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Company's coming.
What the heck was that?
Looked like sort of a big title. A trench coat.
So get out the hors d'oeuvres, watch your manners, and get ready for the great green adventure.
It's kind of like moonlighting.
Ah! And I thought insurance salesmen were pushy.
I love being a turtle!
Doesn't everybody?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, rated PG.
I cannot wait till it comes out of Blockbuster. I'm going to go down there, get that 3-night rental. I'm all set. I mean... They even gave me a new Blockbuster card because mine was getting a little worn out. I'm excited to do it now.
Well, why don't we just keep recording on the cassette tape and you can talk about your first recent adventure. Not so recent. Your level back retro adventure.
Yes. So the adventure that we went on, we had our family together for Easter and the kids decided, hey, let's pull out Ticket to Ride. This was released way back in 2004. It was designed by Alan Moon and published by Days of Wonder. Now, this is a game that a lot of people like to call a gateway game. This is a game that's along with Catan, Carcassonne, even now a little bit, I think Dominion, people look at those as being the entry point to different types of games. You all play a different train company and you're collecting its basically a set collection type of game. You're collecting cards to get the same color cards, and you want to lay down trains of your color in different routes across the country. Now, whenever you lay out a route, If it's 2 trains, you'll get 4 points. If it's all the way up to 6 trains, you'll get 15 points. The thing that makes this game fun that I know I get, there's no going around it, evil whenever I play with my brother-in-law, is I always try and figure out where he's going and try and put my trains down before he gets a chance to. Because there's another thing in here for you to get points. They have special route cards where you may have to connect Portland with New York City, or you might have to connect Philadelphia with New Orleans. But there are some sections where there's only one train track that goes through there. You take that train route, whoever has that route has to figure out a different way to get around to get their route filled. I lost horribly to my one niece and my one nephew. It was horrible. I lost terribly. This game is not one that I'm anxious to get out all the time. Not saying that it's a bad game or anything. It's just there are so many other games out there to play.
Oh, we've all played it a billion times now, too.
Yeah, but it's one of those games that whenever I get it out and I start playing it a couple rounds into it, it gets back into your system and then you're on a roll and you just want to make sure that, at least in my case, I want to just mess up everyone else's plans. If I get my routes done, hey, it's great. It's awesome. If I mess someone up, we have said this millions of times on this show. If I can get a damn it moment out of a game, that means it's a great game. Well,
do you get one of those moments out of your nieces?
Well,
your little nieces.
Since they're smaller, I got a little darn it. So, I mean,
it's
the same thing. Take a look at it. If you haven't played it in a while, pull it out. Blow the dust off it.
I was just about to say, I'm sure everyone listening has had at least a dabbling of Ticket to Ride. So let me ask you this. I played it a lot back in the day. You just said blow the dust off. It holds up. So I'm not going to ask if it still holds up. If it came out today, do you think it would be a successful game? Base Ticket to Ride, like nothing in the Ticket to Ride universe existed. Is this a good game by today's standards?
I think it's a good game. I don't know if it's going to be like a top tier game as far as real brain burny and really getting a lot of oomph out of your gameplay. But as far as if you're just getting into the game and this is a new game to you, yeah, I would definitely say it does. I mean, it gives you the feeling of a game where you're not rolling the die and moving that many spots. It's a great way for a beginner player to start. If you've been into games for a while and you're buying this for the first time, it may be a little forgetful. I mean, it might be one that you play it once and you're like, oh, that was nice. And then you move on to another game.
The decisions aren't quite as meaty after you've played it so many times. And quite frankly, we're 20 years into the future. You know, that this is something groundbreaking at the time that now it's been built upon and expanded upon so much that, like you said, perhaps for some folks it can be viewed as forgettable. Let's suppose that people like the hypotheticals. Your house is on fire and you have the chance to run in and grab 5 games out of your house and save them. I don't want to know what the games are. I just want to know, is Ticket to Ride one of them?
Probably not.
Okay.
But then,
we're not trashing Ticket to Ride.
No, we're just saying.
You know, it's...
It's not one of my top tier games. Yeah, I enjoy it. I like playing it, but there are some other ones that I would probably go for first in order to get them out of a fire.
Now, 15 years ago, we would have been like, oh, geez, Ticket to Ride is the first
thing. Hurry
up.
It's getting warm. Those trains are going to melt. Yeah. So, Patrick, what have you been doing?
Oh, boy. We had the 2021 Shogun Showdown. Some of you adventurers may have seen the pictures of the board I posted as we were playing. Shogun is a game from 1986. I believe it was part of the Milton Bradley Master Series. I think it was the last one released. It since got its name changed to Samurai Swords and has been re-released as Ikusa, I-K-U-S-A. Okay, let's start with mechanics, how this game is played. You've got this big map of Japan with something like 67 territories, and you just deal out cards to start the game. So everybody's got a card that has a territory on it. Everybody gets an equal number. So say there's 3 of us playing. We're each going to have 22 territories. We put one guy on each territory. Now, naturally, that's going to result in some clumping of your units. Like, okay, everybody's going to be spread out across the map, but there's going to be a pocket or two where I've got some force built up, right? The game is attacking each other, rolling dice and attacking each other. It's very risk-like. But there's a couple of differences. Number one, there's several different unit types, a la Axis and Allies. You're rolling a D10, and this guy hits on a 6 or less, this guy on a 5 or less, this one only hits on a 4 or less. So you have varying degrees of power level in the units, but what makes it special is that each player gets 3 armies. You have a little army card in front of you divided into 3 sections, and that's where your army is. There's a little flag guy on the first section and a matching flag piece on the board, and that represents where that army is. Same thing with your second and your third army. Armies, get this, the armies can level up. So your little flag guy on your card will start moving to the right every time they're in a successful battle. So your army normally, at its base level, can do 1 move, 1 attack, and that'll eventually become 2 moves, 2 attacks, all the way up to 4 moves and 4 attacks. So they give you a little variable with the fact that you have armies getting more and more powerful, 3 of them on the board. Now, your army can get eliminated. If somebody wipes out your army in its entirety, you've only got 2 left to play the game. What separates Aikuza, or in the case of our gameplay, the Shogun Showdown, what separates Shogun from other games of its type is that it does have a bidding system. At the end of your turn, for every territory that you have, you collect 1 coin. For every 3 territories you have, you collect 1 coin. At the start of a player round, you're going to bid for turn order. You're going to allocate coins for fortresses, for castles, which are basically defensive units that you can put on the board. And it's just it's a stationary, it's going to be hard for you to attack me here because of my castle type of piece. You can allocate money towards building new troops, towards recruiting new troops. The game has a ninja, and this is that X factor. This is what takes the game from being like, okay, this is risk with a few extra variables. It has a ninja that players can bid for. You have a player screen whenever you're allocating all this money. So I put 2 coins into the ninja, and Mike put in 3 coins. Mike gets to hire the ninja. Ooh, what does that mean? There's this little ninja piece. And the ninja piece you put in front of you, and you can use it anytime in the round. And what it does is you say, you know what? I'm using my ninja on you. You roll a D12. You roll a D12. I think I said D10 earlier. All the dice are D12s. You roll a 12-sided die, 8 or less, you assassinated the leader of that army. The ninja also, if it misses 9 through 12, then the guy who you were trying to assassinate gets to roll the die. 4 or less, so 1 in 3 chance, he got your daimyo of your army. He gets to pick one of your armies and say, you know what, that guy got ninja'd. It's so much fun. And inevitably, every time you play, somebody misses and the ninja was working for me the whole time. And it's one of those stand up, tell a story kind of moments. Shogun is important to us because every year, whoever wins, it's my 2 brothers and my friend Mike, every year, whoever wins gets relentless bragging rights for the whole year. We have a text message chain set up that's just the 4 of us, and we use it to coordinate like the next game day, but really what it's used for is teasing each other, just random jokes, random off the wall making fun of each other. But whoever won at Shogun last year, at least once a month, throws in like, you lost at Shogun, and teases everyone about it. So there's a lot on the line. These are my brothers, bear in mind. It means something. Unfortunately, our 2021 Shogun Showdown to crown the world champion was inconclusive.
What?
Shogun is a very long game. There's no reason to turtle. You constantly want to attack because that's how you build up your income. That's how you level up your armies. But there is definitely a tug of war effect where, okay, this guy's starting to get up there. We got to beat him back a little. How do you win? At the end of your turn, if you've if you have 35 territories, so roughly half the map, you win. And I think the highest we got at one point, I think I had 31 territories at the end of the turn. So what happened? They all kind of teamed up on me a little, beat me back. Then somebody else starts teetering up and they beat me back. So it has that effect. The pacing of the game is slow. I think it works for us because it's simple enough. My older brother's not huge into games, so we typically play something simpler whenever he's there. We like a dice fest where, you know, somebody gets up and starts shaking and, you know, everyone's watching and you splash them into the top of the box and you start counting. You go, you know, there's either cheers or like this dead silence. Like, I got 2 hits. You want to talk about a damn it moment? I can't say some of the moments that we had. It is a fun game. I enjoy it. I can't recommend it because it's so slow, because the entire game is confrontation, because every battle is strictly rolling dice at each other. Yeah, there's strategic points. Okay, I've got four guys to your one. I should win this fight. Oh, no, you took out two of mine. Yeah, that's how dice work. But there's no like, ooh, that was epic type of moment. There's the ninja factor. The game also has a little like hidden Ronin thing that you can bid towards where you hire guys that are only available this round. You take one of your territory cards and place it in front of you face down. And you put all those cheap Ronin on top. And all that means is if somebody attacks you there, ha-ha, look, you attacked me at the secret territory. I've got these eight guys. We enjoy it. It's a solid game if you have a group that enjoys a game like Risk. We reference Risk a lot. And I hope the adventurers understand we don't play. I mean, I don't know about you, Scott. I haven't played Risk in 30 years. Aside from Risk Legacy, yeah. I haven't played Risk in forever. It's just something that everyone can say, oh, okay, I know what he's talking about. It's dudes on a map fighting each other. It was fun, but it was inconclusive.
Now, what would you say here if someone has been playing Risk, they're new to gaming and everything, what do you think is a better one to go to? Because you mentioned both of them. You mentioned you're talking about Shogun, and you mentioned Axis and Allies. Which one do you think is a nice step up from Shogun?
Or nice step up from Risk, you mean? Shogun versus Axis and Allies?
Yes.
I think if their joy in gaming is not getting too involved and not having to think too much and just crashing guys together, Shogun's the way to go. And it does have those surprise moments with those hidden Ronin, with the ninja. If they are more interested in a strategically, playing in a strategically optimal way, I would lean towards Axis and Allies because each territory has value. An income value. So territories have more or less value than others. Whereas in Shogun, really, the territories are all worth the same. Mm-hmm. You know, one third of a coin at the end of your turn. So the positioning is not that important.
Right.
There's a rule for islands. It's harder to invade an island or attack over sea lines. Basically, the defender gets to roll first for the first round. Not that big a deal. Whereas in Axis and Allies, like, if you want to move across sea lines, you need transports. If you want to have transports, you're probably going to need a battleship nearby or something so that they don't get picked off by planes. There's a lot more, not that it's a heavy game, but there's a lot more thinking
right
in Axis and Allies than in Shogun.
Okay, well, that is Shogun.
Or Aikusa or Samurai Swords.
Exactly.
It's been renamed twice.
Well, I had a chance to do one more going back in the Wayback Machine here. This is one that you had introduced to me, and I had to order it right away. Been having a great time playing this. It's one that comes out at SCG every time whenever we're getting close to the end of the evening. We'll pop this out, and we'll play it a few times. And that game is No Thanks, and it was designed by Thorsten Gimler and published by Amigo Games. And this one here is for 3 to 7 players. The whole idea is you want to get as few points as possible from the cards that are played. What will happen is there's a set of cards from 3 to 35. Before you even start, you take out 9 cards randomly. So what will happen is you flip over a card.
Was it 9 or 6?
9. At least in my rule book here that I have with the... It might be a newer edition.
Oh, you're saying you're better than me.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have King before my name, so yes. What will happen is you flip over a card, and whatever number card is there, that is how many points you will get if you have that card. So you will start off with, normally it's around 9 or 11 chips, coins, and you will say no thanks and push one of those in. Then the next person will look at it, and oh, it's 24. No, I really don't want 24 points. They'll push in a coin. Oh, come to the next person. No, you know what? I'm just going to take it because there's a couple coins on there, and I'll have more coins than everyone else.
Now, why would anyone want coins?
Well, the reason why you would want coins is as it goes along, if you think you're being smart and just passing on everything, well, pretty soon it's going to end up you don't have any more coins to push out there to say no thanks. So if a 33 should happen to come out and you don't have any coins, you have absolutely no choice. You have to take that card. And that's why you want to really balance the risk of taking a card or saying no thanks and putting the coins in on it. Now, the nice thing about
this... And don't forget, at the end of the round, scoring.
Right. The thing that makes things interesting here with this is if you have a 33 and the next card that comes out is a 32, well, you want to hurry up and grab that, because one of the mechanics in this game is if you have a sequential card that is lower than that card that you have, you can put it on top of it. So that 33 and 32 don't count out to be in a 65. It's now 32. Luck upon luck, a 31 comes out. Hey, guess what? That 32 just became a 31. So you're getting down lower and lower. And if you really time it well, you can just see, like, no one else has anything near that. Well, I'm just going to say no thanks and just allow the chips to build up on that card and take it whenever you want to. So you've got the best of both worlds. You're lowering your score, plus you're getting all the chips, which allows you to pretty much dictate how the game's going to go. It's a quick game. You play it in maybe 10, 15 minutes or so. I take that back. Each round is probably going to be about 10 or 15 minutes. The whole game till you play to like an agreed upon score, like maybe 150 points. Whenever someone gets to 150 points, the game's over. So you're looking at probably maybe about a half an hour or so to play the game. It's a very light game. It's an easy game to get kids into playing if you have a family thing going on. It works out great. I mean, it's really a clever game. I'm glad you brought it to the shop that night and introduced it to everyone. Yeah, no thanks. Quick little game. Easy to take with you pretty much anywhere. Throw it in your backpack. You're ready to go. Definitely check that one out.
No thanks lives in my gaming bag. First up, don't forget those coins that you collect. Not only do you have more power, more ability to pass going forward, those are worth -1 point each at the end of the round.
Oh, I forgot about saying that. Yes.
That 24 is not a very appealing card to collect, but if it has 9 of those coins on it, man, that's a lot of passing power, and that's -9 points at the end. You can really, really make some plays in there. But what you said with your example, you've got the 32, the 31, and the 30 flops up. And you've got all these coins because you took the 31, you took the 32. Man, there is no feeling in a game quite like, I am going to bleed you guys dry of your coins. Like, man, the ball is in your court. You're Mr. Big Chest all of a sudden when that happens. And honestly, that's the game. Now, it's not always going to work out for you. Like, if you had the 32, you could take the 30 and there's a bunch of coins on you. You could be real happy about that. But those 9 cards that got removed from the deck at the start, the 31 might be one of them. So you might not be able to link up your 32 with a 31 with a 30 and collectively only have to take on 30 points. The 31 might not be in the deck. So you have to combine your 32 and your 30 and it's 62. It doesn't matter that you collected 15 or 20 coins. You still scored a boatload of points that you didn't want because you didn't find your 31 card. It's just a fantastic, fantastic game. This is one that you can introduce to people that don't play games.
This
is one that you could, after a meal with family, grandma would be able to play, you know, grandma that plays spades in her card club. She would get in on no thanks. And also your 11-year-old would understand it and be able to play it. You could then take it to your game day with your hardcore gamer friends. And it's going to be a hit. It's going to be a hit. If there's any complaint I have with no thanks, is it makes me angry for two reasons. One, if I take the 32 and the 30, I never get the 31. Even if it's in the deck, someone will take it just to spite me. They'll be like, you know what? I don't care that I'm taking this. I'm going to spite you. Ooh. And number two, I can't stand it when somebody, like, this is going to sound pompous, but like, okay, a 6 flips up. It's like, you just take the 6, you save your coins, and then you connect on the 5, the 7, etc. 6 will flop, and someone will be like, yeah, no thanks. And then the next person's like, no thanks. And then the person right before me is like, I'll take that, thank you. And it's like, how come you got to sit next to the dummies? Great pick with no thanks. Well, Scott, what do you say we go around the geek?
Hey, that sounds like a plan there. Let's do it. What are we talking about this week?
Gaming pet peeves.
Ooh.
They don't have it.
Trying to find the Nintendo games you want can be a lot like being in a Nintendo game.
Another dead end.
Come on.
You can end up looking in all the wrong places.
Oh, no!
Stand back, son. Or you can go to Toys R Us. Toys R Us has the world's biggest selection of Nintendo games and accessories at everyday low prices.
Next time, let's just come to Toys R Us.
That's another pet peeve I have there. Just whenever you're getting into a game show on TV and they say, wait, we'll give it to you right after this.
Yeah, right after these messages. I don't know if this is going to become a regular thing. But
so our editor, kind of I have a pet peeve with our editor.
You know what you're going to do is give him a pay cut. All right, gaming pet peeves. And when I made this post, my example was when I'm shuffling a deck of cards, say a poker night or no thanks, whatever the case, you're shuffling the deck of cards and you deal the cards out to someone and somebody at the table, they look and they have a hand that's maybe not even the same, but that seven of clubs came back to them, whatever it might be. And I look at the cards and they go, oh, wow, did you shuffle? I just want to be like, you just watched me thoroughly shuffle the deck of it. What are you talking about? Did I shuffle? And for that matter, if the deck is fully randomized, you're going to have times when you see the same card. If you went the whole night and you never had a hand that had at least one card that was similar to your last hand or the same for that matter, then the deck's not being shuffled. Oh my goodness. That grinds my gears. What did you think of? What's something that just really gets under your skin?
Whenever you are playing a game in a public place and the conversations around you start bleeding into your game and some of the other people that are playing are taking part in those conversations as well, and it just kind of bleeds apart your gaming experience. I mean, occasional question here or there, that's fine. But whenever you're fighting to get everyone to say, okay, let's stay on the topic of the game we're playing right now. That's one of my big pet peeves.
I think something happens where, like, if I have someone that's getting sidetracked into conversations, I can't help but feel like either that person is not giving me and or the game their full attention, which is what I expect when I sit down to play a game with some person or many people, or the person who is talking with them is being disrespectful mm-hmm. of the fact that we're doing something right now. You know, you don't go up to a soccer game that's going on and from the sidelines start having a conversation with your kid that's in the middle of the game. You know, you understand, okay, wait, no, they're doing something right now. It is kind of like a breach of that wall. Oh, yeah, I hear you there.
Yeah.
I collected some of the most common responses. You ready?
Okay, let's hear what grinds other people's gears.
Okay, this one came up a whole lot. People that bend the cards in their hand. They're bending as they're playing. Geez, 15 years ago, we used to have a poker night. And my one friend Ryan was notorious for, like, I don't know why he couldn't just hold his cards gently. Like, he'd mash on these cards. And you know what ends up happening is you have a marked card. Mm-hmm. Never mind in a board game where it's like, you know what, this is my copy. It was expensive. This isn't a $2 deck of bicycle cards.
It's become a little bit more of a respect thing that we don't want to mess up your game or anything, but other people that play with just your deck of bicycle cards might not know it and grab it and I think that I would just say, do you mind not doing it that way? Just in a polite way, you can say it. It all depends on who the people are that you play with, I think, anymore.
Yeah, most of the people that we play with don't do that. But I feel like if there was someone new to my gaming group that was doing that, what would be awkward is that, am I the bad guy if I'm like, excuse me, don't hold your cards that way? Like, mm-hmm. I want everybody to have fun. They should know, okay, you got to respect this. You know, maybe they don't know. Maybe in their mind, you know, if they're not a hobby gamer, they're like, oh, this, I don't know, it's a card in a game. It's, you know, I've only ever played poker. You're supposed to manhandle the cards. You're supposed to, you know, it's not a keeping thing. And it just feels awkward to be that guy that's like, excuse me, please don't. You know what I mean? And I feel like I shouldn't be in that position in the first place. Card benders, good one.
Yeah.
People who wait until their turn to start thinking about what they're going to do. Now, this comes in many varieties. This is, you know, I was distracted or things changed or they're an overthinker. But you know how, like, I'll teach a game and I'll even say to people, like, okay, look, when it's not your turn, start thinking about what you want to do. Because when your turn comes up, you're on the clock. Nothing?
Oh, I'm sorry. You just kind of like stopped, and I was like, I didn't know if I froze or what happened there. So, okay.
Oh, okay. People who wait until it's their turn to talk on a podcast, and they don't realize that it's their turn to talk. Did I lose
you again?
Oh,
I'm sorry. Is that me?
Here we go. Moving on. Players on their cell phone. What do you think about that, Scott?
That one definitely does grind my gears. Kind of ties in with that last one where they're busy looking on their phone or something, and then it's their turn, and then, okay, what am I going to do? Let's play the game, and then once we're done, hey, do what you want to do there. Or if you even have to, if you're thinking about something, just jot down a little note like, oh, look up this, and keep playing. It almost makes me feel like I'm taking away their time by playing this game.
You're a burden on their life because they're at your place playing a board game and not doing whatever is so engaging on their phone.
Right. That's
definitely the feeling.
I tend to have a odd sense of humor where I kind of come across as a jerk sometimes. And I may look at the person and I'll be like, oh, wait, I'll wait till you're done for you to take your turn. Just do things like that to make them realize that, hey, I see that you're doing this, but please don't let our game interrupt your time on your phone. It's partly like, okay, I'm joking around, but I'm also trying to bring to your attention that, hey, can you just pay attention a little bit?
When I used to work in a restaurant, they had a very strict no cell phone rule for the service. And like, you'd get in trouble if you were on your phone. You could get written up if you're on it multiple times. Now, I haven't worked in a restaurant for several years now, but I understand. I have friends that still do. They've told me that's not a rule anymore. Mm. Management has basically given up that fight. It's a losing battle. And you know what happens? Like with my mom with the basket, she said, oh, I was going to make everyone put their phone in a basket before they came in. I told her, Mom, I just wouldn't come over. I'd invite you to my house. You know, I'd come over for 5 minutes, but, you know, I get emails on my phone. There's calls on my phone. There's, you know, like whether we like it or not, whether we think it's a good thing or a bad thing, the fact of the matter is that in today's society, the cell phone is something that people are going to have out and glancing at every 5 or 10 minutes.
Right.
You got to pick what side of that battle you're on. You can be the manager of the restaurant side of the battle, which is fight it forever until eventually conceding that you can't beat it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can approach it like, you know what? My board game is important to me and I want people to be engaged. And I, like me personally, I don't mind if someone is checking the phone during a game, so long as it doesn't hinder the game.
Right.
If their turn comes around, we have to be like, dude, get off your phone. Okay, that's a problem. That's where it might be kind of like, hey, man, can you, like, you know, I don't care if you're checking your phone or anything. Mm-hmm. I want you to have a good time here, but, you know, you're messing up everybody else's good time. You know, you got to kind of say it in that friendly, like, and these are people, like, the people that I game with, I'm comfortable enough with that I could say that sort of thing too. If it's somebody that just shows up on game nights at the shop, I'd be like, okay, I'm not getting in a game with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
if you're the person that is on your phone during a game, you need to be very respectful of the fact that being able to sit and play the game with whoever invited you to do it is a privilege. You know what I mean? It should be no different than a Thanksgiving dinner, than a soccer game, you know, a cookout. You're there to enjoy each other's company. If you're checking your phone, it better be because it buzzed because you got an email. And if it's not important, just put your phone back in your pocket. If it is important, say, hey, I apologize. I have to. I've done that with you. You know, it's got my wife's on the phone. I can't not answer this. And that's perfectly acceptable. On the other side of that coin, if you're the person that gets bothered by people on their phone, sometimes take a breath. You know, phones are a thing. No matter, like, you are not going to find a group of five people that are going to play with you on a regular basis where all five of them are not on their phone unless you're strange. All right. How about rule? I call this one rules rushers / interrupters. You're explaining the game. You're about 2/3 of the way through the rules. And there's that guy that goes, all right, let's just play. Let's just get started. Or the person that interrupts the rules, not for clarification, but sometimes they want to explain it differently or, oh, wait, hang on one second. You know, like something else comes up. Rules rushers and interrupters. Do you run into this from time to time?
Not that much, but in a very close cousin to this one is one that I would always run into whenever you would play miniature games. And that was a thing known as a rules lawyer. And you would have people that would do certain things. And the one phrase that I would almost feel okay drawing a gun in the Old West and shooting the person for saying that is, well, the rules don't say I can't do that. We want to just beat them silly with a stupid stick or something. I mean,
King Scott with his scepter of beating.
There is nothing else that drives me more nuts than hearing the rules don't say I can't do that.
Adventurer Lori said that when this happens to her, her thing is she's 2/3 of the way through and somebody's like, okay, can we just play? Lori said, I always tell them, okay, you're up, go. I thought, oh, that's brilliant. I'm going to use that for now. I'll just be like, okay, you go ahead. You're first.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
They go, One that came up a lot was, I'm telling you, Scott, this came up more. I don't want to put gender into the equation, but a lot of women said this when someone explains your options to you on your turn. Almost like patronizing.
Mansplaining?
That's the word. I walked right into it. Yes. When some, I guess, yeah, and I think that's probably why this leaves such a mark for the people that responded. They weren't all women. You know, I've had someone explain it to me before, and it's like, you know what, I'm not five. But yeah, mm-hmm. that sort of patronized, like, I'll do it when I'm teaching a game to someone just to make sure that they understand their options. I'll do it for a turn or two. And I've even said to people, do you want me to keep going with the options, or do you think you have a grasp on this? Because I want to make sure I'm not, like, stepping over that line and being imposing. But apparently that's one that gets to people. Mm-hmm. Tying back in with the rules, one of our users, Eric, says, not paying attention to the rules and then complaining when I capitalize on something and they start claiming, but I didn't explain that in my rules teach.
I know I played with someone that came up with that same thing, and every time it came back around to his turn, he mentioned that again. And then it was his turn again, and he mentioned it again. And finally, I got to the point, I'm like, all right, you screwed up. Let's move on. The people around me are usually like, oh, God, they pushed Scott to the breaking point right now. This is not good.
My next two actually really bothered me. One of them was irrationally playing against you because you did one take that or attack that was strategically wise. So you need one more territory to end your turn with, you know, 10 points or whatever. So you attack Jason. For the rest of the game, Jason is making suboptimal moves to get back at you. That bugs the hell out of me. It's like, look, play to win, not to get vengeance. You know, you got to understand that I didn't attack you because I wanted to start a war. I did it because it was the strategically sound thing. And on the flip side of that coin, if you are attacked, oftentimes you need to acknowledge, okay, it makes sense. I had the easy to take territories doing it because I was right there. You know, maybe I'll attack him back once, but oh my goodness, that drives, it ruins the game for you and for that matter, that player, because you're being attacked for no reason. That player's attacking you, not even to their benefit, and everybody else is running away with the game, and you two are both left, you know, fighting a war of attrition for last place.
I haven't really run into it that much, to be honest. But whenever I have, it's been because it's a bunch of friends playing this game. One person did it to the other person, and then it becomes kind of like a joke. It really walks a fine line because that joke can go to the point of ruining the game or making it the high point of the game because everyone then is laughing about, well, so-and-so won the game. But oh my God, it was hysterical whenever those two were just beating each other up constantly. They had this to do. They had this to do. But they were so hell-bent on beating each other up, it was hysterical. So it really depends on who you're playing with.
The other one that I separated is, yeah, that bugs me too, is when players don't care about a game. They're not invested in it, or players start playing passively once they determine that they can't win. you need to understand that if you're at somebody's game day, they invited you to enjoy yourself and they want to enjoy your company. You know, if you're going to play while you're in it, or if you're not ever going to be invested in the game, what are you here for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a lot of people bring that one up.
Oh, I could definitely see that. And there are times that I sometimes fall into that. So I'm kind of not really guilty of it, but I step on the fringes of it. And mm-hmm. I do my best to make sure that I'm not that person that's just moving randomly to mess things up or anything like that at all. It's mm-hmm. like, do you want to be that person that's not invited to games because you did something like that? Or you know that it's important for everyone else. Everyone else is having fun. This might not be for you. The next game might be your perfect game. Then you're loving to do it. But you know what? Just go through with it. You'll still get something out of the experience. But you won't
don't
get
ruin
the,
it for other people.
Exactly. You might get something out of it. I mean, it may end up being that you had one or two turns that you're like, oh, well, I'm definitely not going to win this game. And then there's this immediate change of fortune. It's like, oh my God, I see the path to glory right now. Let's go. So don't check yourself out.
I put three more on the list just because I thought they were kind of funny. Kathleen says, people who jiggle their leg so the whole floor/table is moving. Remember the Seinfeld with the Jimmy leg when he can't stop like jiggling his leg? We've all done that. We've all seen people do that. I thought that was funny. I could just imagine playing a game and all the pieces are like earthquaking around because Joe can't stop wiggling his leg.
Oh, I know. I do that definitely. My leg goes like crazy, but luckily I don't bump the table. So
Aaron says, when a couple like a husband and wife or boyfriend, girlfriend won't attack each other. You're playing a confrontational game and they won't attack each other or they do things that are suboptimal to benefit each other. Yeah, I could see that one getting old. I don't even know how you fix that. And lastly, I put in, Ollie says, method role players. You aren't Daniel Day-Lewis. So if we're in the kitchen getting a drink, you don't have to still pretend to be a dark wizard, Greg. I don't even know what to say to that.
I'm a little lost for words on that one. But hey, Greg, I think you're going to have an intervention here soon.
Oh, green light just came on. We got to get back to our commercial break.
All right.
Hero Quest. Deep inside another dimension, face battling barbarians and evil magic on a quest for adventure in a maze of monsters. This is HeroQuest, the fantasy adventure game where winning means mastering the arts of combat.
I'll use my broadsword.
And magic.
Fire of Wrath.
Discover traps and enemies. Uncover secret doors. Once you get into it, you'll never be the same. HeroQuest.
Hey there, adventurers. Scott here. Today we're going to be talking about a review game, Puerto Rico, released in 2002. This was released by Rio Grande Games and designed by Andreas Seyfarth. It's for 3 to 5 players and plays anywhere within 90 minutes to 2.5 hours. In the game, you're going to be playing as governor of Puerto Rico. You want to be able to accumulate the goods needed to ship them off to Europe in order to have the most victory points of all your opponents. In the game, you will have very basic components. This is, like I said, from back in 2002. It's a very basic game, but the mechanics are what makes this game stand out. You will have a small map in front of you that's going to be the map of Puerto Rico. There will be 12 squares on there. Those 12 squares are where you can build different plantations or quarries in order to build your goods or make the buildings that you're going to be building cheaper. There's also a map in the top left-hand corner of San Juan. Now, this will be showing you where you're going to be building buildings. There are 12 spaces there as well. In order to get to the victory points, you need to assume roles throughout the game. Now, there are 7 different roles that you can play. You could be a prospector, you could be a trader, you could be a captain, a settler, a builder, a mayor, or a craftsman. Now, each one of these allow you to do different things, anything from building a building to getting settlers to work at your plantations or even just getting money to build the buildings. Now, then the first player will go through and they will choose the role. The first player is the governor that they call in this game. Being the governor, or the first player, allows you to choose first whenever you're choosing the roles. Now, whenever you're the first person to choose a role, you get a slight benefit because everyone else is going to be following the role that you chose. So it could be something as simple as choosing to be the settler. What will happen there is that you are going to be putting a plantation out on Puerto Rico. If you're the first player, you can put a plantation out on the island of Puerto Rico, or you can choose from putting a quarry out there. And having a quarry, that will allow buildings to be a little bit cheaper to build whenever you're building. Everyone else only has the choice of selecting a plantation. This will continue, and each time that someone selects a role, they'll take the card with the name on it, and everyone else finishes up what they're going to be doing. The cards that are left over are given a coin at the end of the round. So they're looking a little more attractive whenever they come around for the second time around, or even sometimes the third time around. In these roles, you will build buildings, you will accumulate goods, you will ship things to Europe in order to get victory points. The game will continue like this over the time period until one of three things triggers the end of the game. One, there are no more settlers to be added to the plantations or the buildings to work at. Two, someone has built all 12 spaces in the city of San Juan with their buildings. Or three, someone has built all 12 spaces of quarries or plantations on the island of Puerto Rico. Once this is all finished, you will then go take a look at your victory points, add them up, and see who was the most efficient governor of the island. That person will then be the winner of the game. This is an older game, but you have to really appreciate the mechanics that were put into this game that really have stood the test of time and are still working in a lot of games that we're playing today. So let's go back. We'll find out what Patrick has to say about it for playing for the first time. And we'll see what my thoughts are for playing it once again after many, many years. So thanks a lot, adventurers. Let's get to the table.
Thank you, Scott, for the walkthrough of the classic game Puerto Rico. So we're going to give this oldie a look at our 8-bit breakdown, starting with bit number one, the art and components. The floor is yours, King Scott.
The art and components, from my version, horrible. I will be honest. This was done very early on with the whole idea of hobby board gaming. You've got some cardboard chits. You have cardboard mats for your cities, for where all the different buildings you can build. You've got all the little wooden pieces for your corn, your indigo, your coffee, tobacco, and sugar. There's nothing special here at all. Your colonists that you put in the fields to work, they are just little wooden discs. There's nothing special about this at all. It's more like you're playing a game with a spreadsheet than anything else.
Very little art, minimal components, bland colors, and quite frankly, by today's standards, this just wouldn't cut it. If it was on Kickstarter, I don't think it would fund. We had the opportunity to speak with the designers of Thayergy, and they launched a year ago, and they just recently relaunched and had a successful campaign, but they said one of the things that happened a year ago is that we had a lot of people asking for deluxe components, and they didn't have that option. They had a whole lot of feedback that their components weren't exciting. We thought that the game was amazing. But I can understand where for a lot of people you get so used to, you know, the big plastic pieces, the screen printed meeples, the beautiful art that we're getting in games today. Puerto Rico has none of that. It's definitely a product of its time.
Yeah, it looks like a prototype for a game of today. Like you said, it's definitely a product of its time.
Bit number two, the theme and immersion of Puerto Rico. Before we dive into the theme and immersion of Puerto Rico, they call the cubes colonists. However, we'll just get this out of the way. Colonialism, in this case, in the case of the game of Puerto Rico, there was enslaved labor. The colonizing of that area, you know, had people displaced from their homes. We acknowledge that, you know, we acknowledge that it is not a good thing. That does happen in this game, and the game does not recognize that that's what's going on. As we were playing it, I even thought, hey, how much does this actually acknowledge the fact that we're using slave labor to grow crops and ship crops and whatnot? And I mean, they even call them colonists. You know, mm-hmm. You could tell yourself, oh, okay, these are Spanish settlers doing the work when in reality they aren't. So we'll get that out of the way now. If that's something that you cannot stand the idea of playing a game where that is going on, then this game isn't going to be for you. Mm-hmm. Having said that, this is a game about growing crops and shipping them. How did you feel about the theme and the immersion of Puerto Rico?
Once again, I look at this that this was one of the first games I actually bought. So this was really one of my gateway games to hobby board games. So at the time, yeah, I was really into it. I'm into it because you have all the different roles that you can play. You can play the prospector. You can play the mayor. You can play the builder. There's all these different things you can play. So at the time, whenever I was first playing it, I was that person. I'm figuring out what I'm going to build. I'm figuring out what I'm going to do. Coming back to it now, revisiting it after, oh God, I mean, it's probably been 10 years since I played it last. It doesn't really hold the theme that much. I mean, I still enjoy it, but I don't really feel the draw into it that I'm actually playing that role. It feels more like I'm playing a game on a spreadsheet.
I felt immersed by the gameplay itself. The gameplay was intriguing. That's what had me excited for my next turn. The pre-planning. If I do this now, I can do this on the following turn, and that's going to turn into another play three turns down the road. That part had me invested. But the actual theme of the game, like, oh, I need to get these crops stored in the warehouse. I'll give you that. I think this isn't a theme forward game at all. This is a gameplay mechanics game. And because looking at it by today's standards, it was one of the first of its kind. It's kind of like looking at Dominion. You know, we can acknowledge that it did something new and it was mind-blowing. But it's been built upon so much. And we played so many games that have built upon it that to go back to floor number one isn't as exciting, I don't think, as it once was. How about complexity?
Complexity. It's not really that complex of a game. You choose what role you want to play. You take your action. The next player takes their action. It goes on around. The next person chooses a role, and you do the same thing. As far as complexity, it's just trying to plan out the order in which you want to do things.
Absolutely.
Where you need to be the prospector to get money in order to buy buildings, in order to store your goods. The complexity comes in making sure you have what you need when you need it.
Yeah, I'll agree with you, especially going back to the by today's standards and having played so many games that build upon that. This is still a fine game. And I think that if you want to introduce it to somebody who's not a gamer, they're going to have a hard time with it because there are a lot of mechanisms. It's just that so many of us now are introduced to games that have built upon them that these feel like a watered-down version. You know, the action selection, oh, they get a coin added to them, so their value increases. Well, yeah, no duh. Did I just say no duh? Okay, at least it's the retro episode. I can get away with it. It's not a complex game for a hobby gamer. I think for a hobby gamer, it's to the point now, what with people having expected opening moves, that it's been sort of solved, you know, how you open the game, how you start the game. The complexity is just not that difficult to grasp.
You can definitely tell that this is one of the building blocks of today's games.
Let's loop bits 4 and 5 together, the rulebook and the learning curve, because I think for a lot of folks listening, the purpose of this review is not to tell you about a game that you haven't heard of or that you may not have played yet. It's more to revisit a game from the past and maybe see if it holds up to today's standards. Should you be buying it if you haven't bought it? If you just got into the hobby a couple of years ago and you've heard of Puerto Rico, well, let's go over the rulebook and the learning curve in that regard. So, Scott, you taught it. Why don't you talk rulebook?
The rulebook is a Rio Grande rulebook where you have the main section, you have paragraphs of what you need to know to play the game. But then they have a little sidebar along each one of the pages where it has, it's kind of like, what do they have now? The TLDR of it, the too long didn't read. So they have little footnotes as to, here's the big thing you need to know from this paragraph. Here's the big thing from this paragraph you need to know. You can read through the rules, and once you get used to it and you go back to it again, you can just read the sidebar just as a refresher.
Love that.
Yeah.
Gives you the opportunity to just skim and be able to teach it without having to read every single paragraph and look for the minutia. Love that.
Right, right. The other thing that I love is they have in the back of the book all the buildings that you have to play with, to build. They have the listing of all the buildings and what each one of them does. So you can take a look at that instead of hovering over the game board, seeing what's going on. You can just take that between your turns. I know we talked about things with people being taken away from whatever game they're playing, but this one here is a positive where you're looking at it and it gives you a chance to look through and say, I really want to go after that large warehouse. That's going to help me store the goods that I need to ship out later on. What were your thoughts on learning the game for the first time?
Actually, I'd played this game several times back in the day. I haven't played it for a long time, so I did need to sort of relearn it. So take this with a grain of salt because I have learned the game before. It was a bit more of a refresher, but if I had to teach it, I couldn't even begin to. So I was learning when you were teaching it. Again, not a difficult game because we've played things today that have used what Puerto Rico introduced. I think that your average gamer that's played hobby board games that have come out in the last few years is going to look at the learning curve of this and be like, oh, wow, that's it? And that's a wonderful thing. Kind of like you were talking about No Thanks in our recent adventures. The game is not overly complicated, and yet it's very deep. There's a lot of things, a lot of branches, paths that you can take, various strategies to do well in it. Learning curve simple. You're going to understand everything a few turns into the game. And by the time you're done, you're going to have a pretty good grasp on what you may want to do for your strategy next game. So let's look at replayability and variability of Puerto Rico.
I think back in the day, I know for a fact. I played this thing like crazy whenever I first got this game. Replayability now, I mean, it's built in there. You have different ways of looking at things. As far as with people choosing their roles, you don't know what people are going to do. So that's completely random, but still there's enough strategy that you can command your own course. So you need to be able to roll with the punches of what people take in front of you as far as their roles and be able to have one, two, maybe three different routes to take instead of just basing everything on luck of whatever's there. You know what? I really want the builder. But if I don't get the builder, I'm going to go with this. And if that's not there, I'm going to go with the captain.
I guess the variability only comes from the initial offering of tiles for the early on plantations, correct? Your coffee, your indigo, like what's available there. Otherwise, this game's kind of an anomaly. Like it doesn't fit the mold of replayable that I would identify. A game like Tapestry, you have different civilizations, you have different tapestry cards available, different inventions available. So many games now give you an asymmetric player power, a modular board, all these things to make it different every time. And Puerto Rico really doesn't do that. And maybe to me, that's where like I said, it doesn't make sense because normally for me, a game to be replayable is going to need all of those little variables. Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico doesn't have the variables, and yet I still want to play it again. I think the main variable being the other players, what they're going to select when picking one of those roll cards at the start of a round. There's enough to do. There are enough decisions to make from the static setup. The buildings don't change. You're always going to have the same buildings. Mm-hmm. Somebody took the last copy of the small warehouse. Okay, now you got to pivot. Or maybe next time you play, you need to get it quicker. Somebody is going for a ship the cheap goods strategy. Oh, I was worried someone might do that. That means what do I need to segue into knowing that? It's replayable. I said this earlier in the episode. It's replayable in the way that chess is replayable, in that there are so many things that you can do that the other players are your variable that makes it fun.
Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartedly on that. bit number 7, our plays and strategy. Now, what did you think about this, Patrick?
Well, it's definitely not a laugh out loud kind of game. It's definitely a thinker. I felt a lot of the gameplay is going to revolve around identifying the resources that you're going to be able to ship and stack the boats accordingly. When I say the game is not a solved game, but there are expected openings, the two basic strategies are get the cheap things and ship them. Ship them early and often. And the other one is get the more expensive things and get the buildings. Try and run the clock before the shipping strategy can capitalize on all that shipping. I don't know. I was surprised with how much I valued coin from turn to turn. That, like, there were some turns where it was like, man, I don't need coin at all. And then there were some where it was like, whoa, this is paramount. I really hope I get that guy with 3 or 4 coins on him. There's definitely reward in thinking a turn or two in advance. Kind of like when we played Brass, you cannot play in the moment. Mm-hmm. Your plays this turn have to have a benefit for you next turn. You have to acknowledge what that benefit will be, and you have to start planning now as to what you're going to do after that turn in order to play this game well. I really enjoyed that.
It's surprising for a game like this that there would be a take that kind of mechanic, but the shipping really does have that, where if you have the goods and you get your stuff on the ship to ship out to make the money or fill up the ships with goods, knowing that the other people have other goods to ship out, which they can't mix and match on the ships, that is something there that's one of the biggest strategies in this, is getting the shipping going as quickly and in your favor that you can.
You put coffee on the boat that holds 4 because neither Coolmat nor I could produce coffee. So you knew that any time it was time to start loading up the boats, you'd be the only person who could put coffee on that boat. And then we had to struggle to fill up the other 3 with a very limited number of spaces, and we had an overabundance of resources. Matt had warehouses. I didn't. There were a couple of times where my sugar got dumped, my corn got dumped, and I was like, oh.
And then Matt also went the route of getting his own dock, so he had his own ship, so he could ship his stuff off anytime he wanted to. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing there. Whenever you said about coins are such a important part of this, getting the coin in order to build the extra dock and be able to ship your goods whenever you want to, that's a huge thing in this game.
Let's talk, was it fun and who is it for? This is a game that is nearly 20 years old. It was number 1 on Board Game Geek for a long time before being supplanted by Agricola. Now it sits at number 28. This is still in the top 30 games of all time. Scott, was Puerto Rico fun?
It was fun to revisit it. I think I would want to revisit it a couple more times before I actually say it's fun. Coming back to it, it was just trying to remember it and get back into the flow of things. I wasn't in the groove at that moment to really play it. But I think playing it a couple more times, then it kind of gets those gears going, your mind going in that way you hadn't been thinking for 10 plus years or whatever, and get back into it. I enjoy the different things, whereas this, once again, I say the whole thing where this is one of the building blocks of our current games right now. So it's nice to go back and play a stripped down version of a current game and being able to just do the basic mechanics of what so many other games are building upon, where you see this is how things work. It's kind of like taking apart an engine and seeing where all the parts go and putting it back together and seeing how it all works. So it really gives you an inside look to the mechanics of what people are building now.
Puerto Rico is kind of like a rite of passage, isn't it? I think most hobby board gamers will enjoy their play. There aren't any, you know, hootin' and holler moments. There's no laugh out loud. There are no large armies or these epic moments. It's a series of small calculated plays that I think other games have since done it better. I don't know why, but in my mind, I keep wanting to compare this to Brass, and that, like, you're not standing up and cheering and hooting and hollering in a game of Brass, but you are thinking strategically ahead and trying to come up with what you can do now that's going to pay off later. And I like that. I find that fun. And I found Puerto Rico fun. That said, if it never existed and it was released today, yet I just don't think it would be very popular. I think, like you said, the strength of Puerto Rico is in being one of the first of its kind. And we're at a point now where I don't think that there's anything that Puerto Rico offers that hasn't since been done better. And then you throw in the components, you know, the boring tiles, the muted colors, and it's a tough sell, I think, unless somebody asks you to play, you know, hey, you have Puerto Rico, right? Can we try that? Then you got someone that I think is going to be able to look beyond the components. But if you're trying to get your, like the Lobsters, you played with them a bunch of times, you know, they're like a happy-go-lucky group. They'll play deeper strategy games, but I think they'd be a little disenchanted by a game like Puerto Rico because it's strictly like look down, look across, look down, look across, you know, for an hour and a half. That said, Cool Matt seemed to like it. I liked it. It still holds up today. But I think if we did this review 5 or 10 years from now, we'd be like, oh, yes, I remember that. I can appreciate that it was good, but I don't want to play it anymore.
Puerto Rico, not a bad game, but it's
starting to look a little dated, isn't it?
A little bit, yes, yes. I think that's a good way of putting it.
There's something strange in the neighborhood.
So who are you gonna call? Ghostbusters!
Each sold separately.
Have no fear. Venky, Steph, and Spangler are here. So are these ghosts. They've got ectoplasm.
We've been goofed. Now what?
Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Let's show this pile of dessert who's boss.
Activate Neutrona Blaster.
We ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Peter Venkman, Ectoplasm, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and other figures each sold separately. Ghostbusters, new from Kenner.
I know that sound. That's the sound of Adventures on the Horizon, but I didn't get anything. I didn't get anything in the mail or anything. I guess that means that you did. So what did you get in the mail, Patrick?
Oh, I got a game called Hidden Leaders.
Oh, okay. And what exactly is Hidden Leaders?
Hidden Leaders. This is designed by Marcus Muller, Andreas Muller, and Raphael Stalker, published by BFF Games. Hidden Leaders, if you're listening to the show right now, it is live on Kickstarter. They sent us a prototype copy that we could play, and Scott, unfortunately, I did not get a chance to play this one with you. I played it with my brother several times. Hidden Leaders is simple. Check this out. You're going to like this one. You get a little bored. I'm going to hold up pictures so that I can teach you as I'm telling adventurers all about it. You get this little board that goes in the middle of the table. And it's got these lines going across. It's divided into little sections, and it goes from left to right. You have a red crown representing the Imperials, and you have a green mountain representing the Druids. So you have two different factions that are represented on this chart. There are two other factions. You have red, green, blue, and black. Four different factions you can play with, and there's a whole deck of hero cards that are going to move this red and green marker across that board. And the factions win in different ways. The undead, the black faction, if both of the markers are ever at the far right end of that board at the end of the game, then the undead win. If the green is ahead of red by two, then the Druids win. If red is ahead of green by two or more, then the Imperial Army wins. Finally, the Water Clan, they're indifferent. They just want to see red and green either on the same space or right next to each other. And the whole game is using these cards, these heroes, to manipulate where the red and green marker are on the board. So at the start of the game, everybody's going to get a hidden leader card. There are six. Everybody gets one at random, and that's going to have two different faction affiliations. So I might get a guy like Mered the Banished. He's half black and half green. What that means is that for me to win, I need to see either the undead win or the green, the Druid clan, win. So I'll have my hidden leader, and he's face down, as you might imagine, hidden from the other players. And then everybody's going to get some number of hero cards. Hero cards all have a faction. There are black cards for the undead. There are red cards for the Imperials, etc. And each one of them typically are going to move one of the markers left or right, or both of them in some fashion. Sometimes they'll do something completely different. Like rather than moving the markers, it might say draw two cards from the discard stack. So you get to play one hero per turn. That one you're just going to place face up in front of you. You're going to move the marker. You're going to do any other ability that it has on it. And then you're going to end your turn. And at the end of your turn, you get to draw a couple cards, put one face down or face up into the tavern, and it play proceeds to the next player. Okay, now I mentioned the tavern. What is that? When you're drawing your two cards, you can draw from the deck, or you can draw one of the three face-up characters that are in the tavern. So you can start to deduce, okay, Scott keeps drawing the red guys that are in the tavern. I think Scott wants to see red win. Oh, Steve keeps pushing them back closer to that green marker. I think Steve might have a blue leader and he wants to see blue win. The game will continue until one person has a number of heroes in front of them. That's going to vary based on the player count. If you're playing with two people, for example, the game ends once somebody has placed their eighth hero, at which point you look at where your markers are on this here board and you determine, okay, both of them are in this far right section colored black. So, the undead win. So what happens? Everyone at the table is going to flip over their hidden leader and anybody that was black can claim victory. But what if there were two of us? Then we look at our heroes, and whoever has the most heroes of that color wins. What I loved about Hidden Leaders is that it is 20 minutes. It's quick. You can set it up. We finished a game, we're like, let's go again. Finish another game, let's go again. And you start to find little strategies. You start to understand how to deduce what the other person's hidden leader might be as well. I think this is going to live in the game bag.
Oh, wow. One of those there. That's always... I mean, it's like I have the in-law approved and you have the, it's in the game bag.
Lives in the game bag. It took up residence in the game bag. Yeah, you know what? It's so simple. It's easy enough to introduce to people. We talked about Doomlings a few episodes ago and we're like, oh, wow, this is really easy. This has more meat on the bones than Doomlings did. Mm-hmm. But the rules are still simple enough. And the game is still fast enough that, I mean, if you have 2 hours, you could bang out five or six plays of it.
Is there a lot of strategy in this? I mean, do you really get like a full game experience out of the quick little plays that you had?
There are filler games like Exploding Kittens where you're basically drawing cards. You're just playing war. You're not playing the game. You're carrying out the activity of the game, and if you have the right card at the right time, I win, right? You're not actually getting to have any sort of strategic agency over what you're doing. Hidden Leaders gives you that. It is 20 minutes, so it is quick. I can't tell you that it's a complex game. Very rarely is a 20-minute game deep and complex, but you're not going to feel cheated. If you're a gamer and you want some meat on the bones, you want to feel like, you know what, I did that. I made that happen, or I was able to. I had agency in the game. Hidden Leaders is going to give you that.
I know. I can definitely tell by the way you're talking about it, you had fun playing this game. But who would this game be for?
Well, I think if you don't have a good 20-minute filler game that has some meat on the bones, if your game group has been playing the same filler game over and over, if you're ready to switch it up, I think this is one that's actually going to give you some strategy. I think this would work well for kids, too. The art is playful enough. The names on the cards. This one is the Curious Cat Lover, for example. The Resilient Rear Guard. The game is not a cutesy game with a whole bunch of, like, every card is a little joke. But every now and then, some of the cards, like the Saltwater Sage, the Tentacled Oracle, it's like, okay, they had some fun with these with these names. They had some fun with the art. And yet it's not over the top like, okay, this is just cutesy, a random luck game. There's some strategy here. And yet it's very appealing. I think this is going to have mass appeal in that there is enough strategy for gamers, and yet it's not overwhelming for non-gamers, and the playtime is short enough. This can be a family game, Scott, and yet this is one that I would not be opposed to taking to the shop and playing with the gamers, because there's game here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll go back to Exploding Kittens. I'll play it with my family, but I'm not going to show up at the shop and be like, hey, guys, check out what I brought. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, that's, you know, that's cute. We're above that now. No offense to Exploding Kittens. I'm not a big fan, but those of you listening, I hope you understand what I'm getting at. I'm not trying to dig at a game. I'm trying to dig at a style of game where you don't play it. This one is one that you play.
You kind of win me over on this here. It sounds like a lot of fun, and I look forward to
we'll play it on Thursday.
Trying to get a game in. Now, where is it that people can get this game again?
Easy, Kickstarter. They're live right now. They told me they're going live on April 20th. So if you're listening, head on over to Kickstarter and check out Hidden Leaders. I am telling you, for the time frame, this game is a winner. They love feedback from the community as well. You can contact BFF Games at info@bffgames.org. They're very interactive. You can find them on social media as well. Full disclosure, they did give us a prototype copy, and they said that whenever the Kickstarter's over, they're going to send us a copy of the Kickstarter version. In the meanwhile, I said, what do I do with this prototype? They say, you know what? Feel free to give it away. So we're going to give our copy away to a listener, and we're going to throw in a little bonus. I didn't tell you about this, Scott.
Okay, what's the bonus then?
Here comes a surprise. I printed out black and white glossy photos of you.
Oh, God.
And I need you to sign them, personalize and sign them, so that whoever wins games going forward on the Level Up Board Game Podcast will also get a picture of King Scott in Renaissance Festival costume. I mean, you look kingly. It is a great photo.
Well, yes. I mean, we need that stamp of approval from King Scott that, yes, you won this game.
Yes. So we're giving away a copy of BFF Games Hidden Leaders. So how do you get it? Simple. Same as last time, Scott. Folks, if you go to our Facebook and like us, if you go to our Instagram and follow us, if you go to our Twitter and you follow us, we'll give you one entry for each of those actions. Plus, if you rate us on iTunes, we'll give you a bonus 3 more entries. You can get up to 6 entries into this contest. Where do I go to enter? All you have to do is go to www.levelupgamepodcast.com, click contact, then click contest. It's going to ask you, did you like us on Facebook? Did you follow us on Twitter? Do you follow us on Instagram? And did you rate us on iTunes? You can get up to 6 entries into the contest for doing that. We're going to end this contest on... Scott, what do you think about 1 month? That would put us on May 20th.
That sounds like a plan to me. Sounds great.
All right, adventurers, so over the course of the next month, we're going to draw the winner on May 20th for BFF Games Hidden Leaders. Fantastic game. Check it out on Kickstarter. Go back it now. In the meanwhile, enter our contest. See if you can't win yourself our prototype and your very own black and white glossy photo personalized and signed by King Scott.
At the end of the show, we always like to look at how we leveled up. We don't look at life as just day by day. We like to look at life as an adventure. For mine, I can say that I leveled up by getting my first shot of the government tracking idea. Well, I'm sorry. Wrong one. I got my first shot of the vaccine against COVID-19.
Do you have any idea how many responses I'm going to get because you said that? Go on.
Yes, so I got my first shot of the COVID-19 vaccine. So I'm one half of the way there of getting fully vaccinated. I did get a message from my normal place of work that they're starting things up again. I'll be traveling around the state. And I'm hoping that once that gets going there once again, that I always make it a point to find game shops out around the state, and I get a chance to play some games with some of our listeners. That's how I leveled up this time. And how did you level up, Patrick?
This one's fun and simple. My birthday was a couple months ago, and my wife got me that Lego Millennium Falcon.
Whoa.
Yeah, I've been sitting on it for a while because there's been so much board gaming time. I had some time to do some other things this past week. So I built me a Lego Millennium Falcon. She even got me this little like LED light insert kit. And that has to have been the hardest part of this. I think the construction manual for it was some 260 pages. And then the little lights to add in the lights had like 100 steps. And it's really neat. These things are teeny tiny though, man. I got some fat fingers for putting little lights on Legos. But it's really cool now. I can turn out my lights in the basement and do that like da 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 bum 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 bum. And I hit the button and on comes my Millennium Falcon. I'm like, I am almost 40. So I went outside yesterday just for like 2 minutes because my mother-in-law was over. She was watching my little girl's cousin. Sarah is 6 and her cousin is 10. So I'm outside with my mother-in-law and they're inside for literally 30 seconds. One of them comes outside. They're like, Dad, she broke your leg. It was literally one panel that clips on, clipped off. And I was like, I had these visions of an exploded Millennium Lego Millennium Falcon on the floor. Simple and easy. That's my level up.
And we always want to open it up to everyone else. Go on social media, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, or go to www.levelupgamepodcast.com. Let us know how you leveled up.
You know, and I'm going to call out you people in Ireland again. I see you. I get a tracker, Scott, that says where our clicks and where our downloads are coming from. Second place to the United States is Ireland. So I know you're listening. I know you can hear this right now.
Yes, please share with us. We just love having this community. So thank you all very much for listening.
Thank you so much for joining this adventure of the Level Up Board Game Podcast. We encourage all adventurers to check out our website at levelupgamepodcast.com. There you can submit your thoughts and audio to be used in a future episode. Please consider rating us on iTunes. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and join the Board Game Geek Guild, Guild 3722. Music for the podcast provided by Adam Haynes. Learn more at adamhaynesmusic.com. And remember, you can spend another night on the sofa, or you can get some friends together, get some adventures on the table, and level up.